scaling up is not always the main goal when you have a business, right? Sometimes what you actually need to do is scale down. In this episode with the amazing Nicholas Kusmich, owner and operator turned CEO overnight, who has generated well in excess of over $600 million, we talked about his life and his career and how they shifted by scaling down and netting up. So what's netting up? Well, listen to this episode and we'll talk about its definition, about the importance of reevaluating your life, how to achieve bliss in business, and how to realign and orchestrate your life around your true purpose and core values, and many, many, many more things. Don't miss this episode. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the show that's redefining success for high achievers globally. This is where you come to hear from high achievers who are making bank, making love, making memories, and who are truly happy. And here's your host, Liz Benny.
Hey, Animus Kapow, Liz Benny back here with an incredible, amazing Happy Million Show episode with an incredible, amazing Nicholas Kusmich. How are you, my friend?
I am super stoked to be having this conversation with you, and I'm excited to see where this goes, so thanks for having me.
Oh, dude, thank you so much for saying yes. For the listeners and watchers right now, I want you to know that I actually reached out to this guy with I just sent him a Loom video. I was like, let's go. Like, I know that you're super high energy. You wrote a post on Facebook. Do you remember that post on Facebook?
Which one specifically? I'm trying to post
You wrote multiple times a day now. Totally. You wrote a post on Facebook about living in alignment with yourself, putting stuff out there into the universe and actually just, you know, creating a life that you actually want. Like, you're a high level entrepreneur. And that post got my attention. I was like, yes, this is cool. So I wanted a conversation with you.
Yeah.
Nice. So did you just say kapow?
I will, not yet. I'm saving it for the right time.
Oh, perfect. So we're going to have some fun on the show today, talking about business and life that you absolutely love. And I know that at least visually, you've created a business you absolutely love and a life you absolutely love. But was there ever a time in business that you were like, ugh, like, this is not me anymore. I don't like this anymore. I'm out of flow. And then if so, what did you do to change it?
Yeah, great question. So I think when things started, like, I don't know why anyone gets into business. I know when I got into business originally, you know, one of my like foundational principles was to build a business around my lifestyle rather than a lifestyle around my business. But very quickly did that change, because when you join masterminds and you're doing well and everyone scale, 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 grow, scale, you're like, okay, all right, scale, grow, scale. And everything was about up and to the right. Like, you know, if you look at any graph, it's if you're not going up and to the right, you're failing in business. So you join masterminds and everybody's peacocking about their numbers and how everything's working. And so my brain was just like, okay, I kind of started this business to be a lifestyle business, but everyone's exiting their business for $100 million sales and all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm not there yet. I gotta get there. So I started, you know, the first part of our business. So just for clarity, I have a Facebook and Meta advertising agency as one part of our business. And then we have a training business that teaches people how to do digital advertising. So I've got these two businesses. But it started with the agency first. And we just got, like, I don't know, right place, right time, divine alignment of the stars. I don't know what happened or how it happened. I take absolutely no credit for it, but I did ride the wave. And I encourage everybody to ride the wave when it serves one to you. But I got delivered a beautiful wave and I'm like, I'm just going to ride it. I don't know why I got this. I didn't deserve it. I didn't do anything to prepare for it. Maybe I did somehow, some other way, but we're just going to ride this grace wave. And it came and it was just like, bam, 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 working with kapow. It was working with all these amazing people. And things started to grow. And I went from being an owner operator instantly overnight to being a CEO. And I was not equipped to be a CEO. I was equipped to be an owner operator, like the guy who does the craft in the business, manages a few people. And without getting into all of the story, very quickly, we built this agency. I was hiring. We had all these paid staff. We had all these people working for us. And very quickly, I went from having this nice lifestyle business who's paying for my lifestyle and enjoying all this to like running a real operation here in a capacity that I was not trained for, that is not aligned with my DNA, that is just not who I am at all. And now I'm a CEO of this business that's growing massively. And I didn't know what to do. And I think what happened subconsciously, because I knew how much I didn't like being in that position, I started to self-sabotage the business. And so we started letting clients down and we started not performing well. And this was now ruining my reputation, but it was almost like something inside of me was like, I don't care, because if this is my way out, this is my way out. And long story short of it, I I started to reevaluate and I asked myself a couple of questions. Number one, to what extent or how much is enough? Different ways to ask the same question. But like, to what extent? When do you stop? When are you okay? When does the grind, you know, when is it okay to stop hustling and grinding and just enjoy and live in the peak or the valley or wherever you, when is that okay? And then when everybody around me was reading like, and good, I love Vern Harnish, I love all that scaling up, like, but when everybody around me was reading these books, I said, you know what? I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to scale up. What if I just scale down? What if I do that? And I remember specifically being in Denver, Colorado. I was speaking at the ClickBank conference and I met an old friend, and I want to give him credit because he came up with the term Lo Silva. And Lo's like, hey man, long time. I haven't seen you in a long time. I'm like, yeah. And he goes, what are you up to? And I go, man, to be honest with you, I'm scaling down. And he goes, what does that mean? Like, what do you mean scaling down? And I explained to him, I'm like, you know, the problem with scaling up is yes, your top line revenue number goes up, but your bottom line revenue goes down. And I'm like, that equation doesn't make sense to me. How can I be making more money on the books as a company, but what we're actually taking home as an individual or as people part of this company go, like, that doesn't make sense to me. So I told him, I'm trying to figure out the thing where I can continue to grow my bottom line revenue while reducing the craziness, the circus, all that other stuff that's attached to scaling up. And so I said, you know what, Lois, I'm scaling down. And he goes, Nick, you're not scaling down. So what do you mean? He goes, you're netting up. And that term, something lit up inside my brain. And that became the determining factor of how I made all decisions in my life, in my business. And now I had a podcast for some time called Netting Up. I had a YouTube channel that was all about netting up. But now I see everything through that lens of, to me, a new newsletter that I just released and I'm starting to put out there is called The Bottom Line. And what I mean by that, it's a twofold kind of tension into it. The bottom line on one hand means bottom line profits. Like, I don't care about top line profits, it's bottom line profits. And the bottom line means the last figure, the last thing to say that matters more than anything else. And so to me, you know, this principle is the bottom line is the bottom line. And I now make decisions through this lens of netting up. And man, oh man, has life gotten a lot better, Liz, when we do that. And so that was kind of like that turning point for me. And now everything is kind of, you know, experienced through that.
Dude, what an amazing turn. And thank you for leading strong. Because in the sea of people online, and I see that you have got on your webpage here, marketers lie, numbers don't, or something along those lines.
Yeah, sure.
So
yeah.
There are a lot of people out there. You go to the conferences and you see the bravado, you see the Lambo, you see all these things, and then you go, yeah, but what is it actually like at home? What is business actually like? How is life at home for Nicholas? Like, what is the behind the scenes? What are you? Yeah. Do you talk about business with your kids? Do you talk about business with your wife? Like, what's life at home like for you?
Yeah. Oh, what a great question. So I'm fortunate to be one of those few people who gets to work with their spouse. So my wife is very involved in our business and we work together. For some, that's a disaster. For us, it just works. Mm-hmm. But we have very simple rules. I remember just after my daughter was born, and my daughter's 6 years old now, my son's 5 years old, but this was probably like 3 months after she was born. I went away on a business trip because I used to travel a whole heap because I thought that's how to do business and it was cool. And I remember coming home and my daughter, like 3 months old, looked at me after I came home from a trip and just with like, of course she couldn't speak at the time, but her eyes got really big and she's like, oh my God, like, who are you? And then a couple of years later, I was going away again and she goes, Daddy, why do you have to travel so much? And then I think it just hit me, like, what the hell am I actually doing? Like, isn't everything I'm doing supposed to be for my family? And yet I'm away from my family for the sake of profits. And so my wife and I made a couple of very important decisions. The first question we asked is, to what end, right? When is enough enough? When is the lifestyle that we have enough? When is all that? It doesn't mean we're not inspired to grow, but it has to be within certain frameworks and confines and restrictions that we put for ourselves. And so I'll tell you a little bit about our schedules, and that might give you a little insight as to what home life
I would love to know this. Absolutely love to know this, because I actually have frameworks that I make decisions within as well, because I'm all about creating a business and a life that I absolutely love, not at the cost of the things that matter most. So yeah. I would love to know your frameworks. This is incredible.
Sure. So frameworks and schedules, but I'll rewind just a little bit because I was born and raised in Toronto, Canada. Busy multicultural city, 6 million people plus. It's go, 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 go. You know, fortunately, our business was serving us very well. And so we lived in a very like upscale, poshy neighborhood. And I remember like just looking at my kids and thinking, like, I don't want to bring up my kids in this kind of an environment. And it was go, 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 go. It's a very fast paced city. I mean, it's almost like the New York of Canada, if you will. And it was COVID, the tail end of COVID in 2021. And we couldn't travel, but we like to travel as a family. We make sure that once a quarter we go away as a family to just spread our wings and not think about work or anything like that. But we hadn't been able to travel because of COVID. And so my wife is like, we just need to go. We just need to go stretch our legs. I'm like, yeah, where? We can't leave Canada because of all these travel restrictions. So she's like, let's just go somewhere in Canada. So I'm like, where do you want to go? She goes, let's go to the West Coast. And at that point, we had a couple of our friends move to Kelowna, BC, which is kind of the interior of British Columbia, surrounded by mountains and lakes. It's absolutely stunning. She's like, well, why don't we just go visit some of our friends who moved out there? I'm like, I don't know anything about it, but sure, let's go. So we planned a 10-day trip. 5 days into the trip, my wife turns to me and she says, do you think we could live here? And I said, I was thinking the exact same thing. And so I turned to her and I said, for the next, let's extend our trip a little bit longer. And for the next few days, let's look for houses that are out here. You got to remember, like, my wife is not really open to change. She likes being in a very secure place and all that. So when that came to me, I said, like, babe, what happened? Why did you even think about that idea? And we had been out with friends of ours, Brad and Kelly Pedersen, who are now retired. They're successful. They sold a couple of companies. And we were wake surfing on the lake. Now, I didn't even know what wake surfing was, but here we are on the water, wake surfing behind this boat. And they've been avid wake surfers since they had moved out here. And my wife was watching Kelly's face. And she was in absolute bliss on the water, like just in pure bliss, surfing the wave, living it up. And she said something clicked in her mind. And this is what she told me after, because I'm like, what caused you to want to move? She goes, I don't want to wait for that. I don't want to work for that. I want that right now. And so we had that conversation, like, can we do it? Like, of course we can do it. And then we had this conversation about, like, why are we working so hard for a future that one day may be when we can work hard and play hard right now? And so, long story short, five weeks later, we ended up moving out to Kelowna, BC from Toronto, somewhere that I'm born and raised in Toronto. In a crazy turn of events, we ended up selling our house to Nicholas Nurse, who's the head coach of the Toronto Raptors, who ended up buying our house. We have a great story to tell. Yeah, we left our house behind, but it's in good hands. We moved out to Kelowna. And I bring all that up to say, as soon as we came out here, I realized that when we were in Toronto, I was redlining. I didn't know it, but I was operating at a frequency that was just too go, 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 too fast, fast, fast. And I didn't even recognize it. When we came out here, they're like, well, Nick, you got to go buy a mountain bike. I'm like, what am I going to do with a mountain bike? I've never ridden a mountain bike before. Like, you need a mountain bike. So they got me on a mountain bike, took me up to the mountains, fell in love with the sport. Now ride 3 times a week. They said, Nick, you got to learn wake surfing. I'm like, got a whirl on, got to learn wake surfing. Started wake surfing. And now friends of ours, we have the Friday morning surf club. And 3 times a week, we're also wake surfing on the water before work, right? In the summer times. Our family never skied a day in our life, ever. And now we're within 55 minutes of 2 world-class resorts here, and we ski every Sunday. It's our family thing to do. So the case in point is, like, I was moved, uprooted, and put into a new environment that allowed me to actually live and appreciate life now. And then what we did was we reconstructed our lifestyle, and this is kind of our schedule. I mean, we can go into frameworks and whatnot, but our schedule is this. My wife and I both wake up at like 4:45, 4:30, 4:45. And from 5 to 7, we work because the kids are asleep. Nobody's doing anything. Everybody, the rest of the world's asleep around here. That's our productive time. And that's our work time, if you will. At 7 o'clock, the kids get up. So all of a sudden work turns off and we're there fully present with our kids, wake them up, have breakfast with them, get them ready, prepare for them, everything we need to do. And then we take joy in driving our kids to school and spending time with them. So we drive our kids to school, we come back. And then that's probably around 9 o'clock now. And then from 9 to 12, we work. And then that's the end of the day. After 12 o'clock, we start doing what we call blissful activities. So for me, I'll mountain bike, I'll wake surf, I'll ride, I'll do whatever it is. For she loves dance, she horseback rides, she does all these things. And from 12 to 3 until we got to pick up our kids, we're doing what we call blissful activities, things that lower our cortisone levels and increase our bliss activity. We do that for 3 hours, whatever it looks like, for whatever it is. Sometimes it's together, sometimes it's separate. It doesn't matter, but we're all working out, whatever it is. 3 o'clock rolls around, it's time to pick up the kids. We pick up the kids. And then from three until like dinner time, it's 100% present with our kids. Whatever they want to do, if they want to go to the park, they want to do this, they want to do that, go to the beach. It's with our kids. Sometimes they'll do extracurricular activities, so we'll be with them. Then we have dinner, then we wind them down, then we put them to bed. And then we have our own, you know, time by the time they go to bed around eight, from eight to like 9, 9:30, and then we go to bed. And that's our life. Twice a week, we have a date night to make sure that we're spending time together. But we've had this ability now to create and orchestrate a life that is just as much work and just as much play and like 100% bliss, like just bring it all together. And here's the best part, Liz, because I can hear some people being like, I don't have the time for that. I can't do that. Like, how do I do that? I think they're called beautiful constraints. It's like when we first had kids, how do you get 8 hours work done in 3 hours? Because now your kids are screaming all over the place and you got to take care of them. You get it done. It's a beautiful constraint. That's a forcing function to be able to do it. When we prioritized bliss, and again, people will call it different things, but when we prioritize self-care and us and joy and bliss, however you want to word that, it's amazing what you can get done in like two to three hour chunks of work, and then just call it a day and move on. And yeah, I mean, it's been an amazing experience.
Dude, thank you freaking so much for speaking with such truth and energy and tenacity and joy and bliss through. I am picking that the listeners and watchers right now, at least 50% of them are like, I can really do that. I can really do that. And there are going to be some people that probably feel like they need permission from someone to do that. To the person that thinks they need permission, what would you say to them?
Beautiful question. And I, for the longest time, believed that I couldn't do it, right? Like, there's just not enough time in the day, or what about this, or I'm going to let people down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The two things I think that are important is, yes, there are seasons in life. And I think my good friend Todd Herman says the most amount of rocket fuel that's burnt in a shuttle is the launch. Like, some of us are in a season of launch. If you're just starting out, there's a grind to it, right? What I'm going to encourage you to do, though, is don't get addicted to the grind. Mm-hmm. That is a season to get you off the ground into where you need to be, with the anticipation that you are building a lifestyle business. And be okay with that. I want to give people permission to be okay with a lifestyle business, because that took me a long time to do. Because before, I'm like, I need to build a $100 million company that will sell at 3x multiple so I can go buy a private island somewhere and live with my, you know, hands behind my neck, you know, retired. And then I realized, no, I don't. I can have a lifestyle business, and that's okay. In fact, I make more than most of these CEOs who are running these large companies. Anyway, now, if they exit, they'll have a big exit, and that's okay. But the point is, I had to give myself permission to A, be okay with the season of launch, but also to realize that that's not how it's going to be forever. Number two, I had to give myself just honest permission to say, I'm allowed to live a life based on what is right for me, not what everybody else around me says I need to live my life on. And we all have different values, but I think what was important to me, I met this guy who worked with a Nobel Prize winning psychologist, who basically came up with these like interesting, it's kind of like, you know, the DISC assessments and Myers-Briggs kind of, it was a version of that. And what he basically used it for was, he said, Nick, I could go into any organization, I could survey everybody in there, and I will tell you who your top salespeople are in that organization. Because he believed that salespeople were born, not taught. I said, that's interesting. And he uses this as a business. And he asked me for marketing help. And he said, Nick, can I just put you through this process? And I go, I'm like, I'll tell you right now, I'm not a good salesperson. He goes, it has nothing to do with sales. Like, it's to understand who you really are. So he put me through this thing. And then I had a follow-up call with him where an hour he diagnosed and explained what this meant to me. And it was incredible, because what he was explaining to me is, it was like he knew me better than I knew myself. But the main takeaway from all this that I'm trying to get to is, he says, Nick, your number one value in life, your number one value in life, outside of love and family and all that stuff, is autonomy. And he goes, if you look back at your life and understand where the greatest frustrations were, it's when you didn't feel autonomous, like you were in a job that people were like micromanaging you, or you were working with clients who demanded more of you than you were willing to give, or whatever. And he goes, the moment you can orchestrate the entirety of your life around the value of autonomy, you will find joy. And that just hit me. And I said, I give myself permission to be in alignment with who I am. I know that that's not everybody, but I know that that's me. And so for me, I started to orchestrate a life around autonomy because that was a core value of mine. And hence, I'm able to do this. So I say that to say for the people who are listening who say, well, maybe autonomy is not it for me or whatever. It doesn't matter what it is. Find the value that drives you and pushes you forward that you feel the best in when you're aligned and orchestrate your life and your business around that. And the amazing thing will happen. And I know this sounds woo-woo, Liz, and I'm not a woo-woo guy, but I kind of am, but I'm not publicly, however you want to deal with this.
Dude, I'm just going to say to you one second, you are woo and woo and woo. And that is why I wanted to get you on here. I was like, oh, we're going to talk about alignment. We're going to talk about faith. We're going to talk about being and faith, whatever sure. that means to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
people, entrepreneurs need to understand that to hit these multiple gajillion dollars, and I want you to keep the point that I was, that you were going to say before, like it's important to be in alignment and be honest with yourself and be Thank truthful. You don't have to go out there and be the next Nicholas Kuzmich, you don't yes. have to be Alex yes. Ngal. You don't have to be Russell Brunson. Be you, be all of you. So this is actually why I wanted you on the show. This is incredible. Please keep going.
Well, I appreciate that. And I'm happy to talk about, I'm a closet woo, but I'm happy to come out of the closet today.
I just ripped you out of the closet,
woo.
Dude. Yeah, I'm
yeah,
sorry.
We'll just talk all about woo all day long. But no matter what I said or what I tried to do to escape it through my logic, there was just this ever-running principle that when I was, and let's just use the word alignment for the sake of this conversation, when I was in alignment with the true self of who I was, mm-hmm. the opportunities, the money, the experiences, and I know you've heard that before and a million people say it. And I used to hear that and be like, come on, like, okay, whatever. And then you live it and you're like, oh, darn it. Can't explain it, but it's true. Mm-hmm. If you are struggling in your business, there could be a million and one reasons why, but I would challenge someone to like really think about, am I truly walking in the full alignment of who I'm called to be and how I'm called to live that? And am I staying true to the values that are like ingrained into my DNA? Because if you say no to that, maybe that's the reason why things are just not clicking the way they are. And you just have to be open to the opportunities that are elsewhere.
There are a lot of people out here that are listening and watching right now that just need, in my opinion, to just stop. Just stop. Allow yourself to stop for long enough to take yourself away and ask yourself mm-hmm. the big questions. Who am I? What do I want? What do I care about? What are my values? And understand viscerally that life is very, very, very short.
Yeah, yeah.
So what would you say to the person, to the entrepreneur that is miserable, that is disconnected from themselves, but has a bigger, brighter, gorgeous, more joyful, more blissful, more fun. That's my word, by the way. Like yours is bliss, mine is fun. I want to have as much fun as humanly possible.
Yeah.
And I created a framework around that. But what would you say, Nicholas, to the person who is miserable and just needs to stop, but is scared to do so?
I love the word fun. Bliss, whatever the word is. And I would encourage, you know, a good friend of mine, Jeff Spencer, is a performance coach, former Olympian, now coaches people on performance mentality, was working with an NBA star. He was a rookie of the year. He was supposed to be the best that year. And he fell into a slump really early in the season. And it was affecting the franchise because they're like, dude, we're paying you a ton of money to perform. And he's in a slump and he just couldn't do it. And so obviously he was working with his coach and his trainer. And he was practicing free throws and everything. And he was trained as trained could be. Like there's no more training that he could have done physically, mentally. Like he was as trained can be. And they brought him to Jeff. And they said, Jeff, he's still in a slump. What do we do? And Jeff looked at him and said, hey, man, what'd you like to do? Like, what was the greatest thing that you used to do when you were a kid? What brought you a ton of fun? And he goes, you know, like I was an aspiring violin player of all things. And he goes, 10 minutes a day, do nothing more, no more free throws, no more training. You're all trained up. You're as far as you could go. 10 minutes a day, play the violin. And he goes, yeah, but I suck at violin. He goes, I don't care how good you are. You're not playing for anybody. You're just playing for yourself. 10 minutes a day, do the thing that inspired you when you were a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so he started playing 10 minutes a day. And I don't know exactly what the time frame was, whether it was a week or 3 weeks or 3 months or whatever. Anyways, turned around, turned out of his slump. ended up becoming MVP of the year for the entire NBA that season, and just crushed it. And it went on to, you know, do a great career and get all these raises and everything like that. So, you know, if my advice was anything, it would be similar to what Jeff is saying. It's like, I was in a position where, like, I almost didn't remember what gave me joy as a kid, unfortunately, because I think I blocked it out or whatever the reason was. But I had the opportunity to just try new things. Like when I moved out here, I tried mountain biking, I tried wake surfing, I tried all these things. And I started to recognize things that just gave me joy. And I think the person who's in the slump, who's scared, maybe the advice is the same thing. 10 minutes a day, just 10 minutes a day. And whatever, I might even word it of 10 minutes a day of practicing self-care, right? I don't know what that means. That could be going to the spa, getting a massage. It could be just lying out in the sun, saying nothing. It could be blasting music and dancing. Well, 10 minutes a day where no one else on this planet matters except you first. I remember the late Sean Stevenson. I was with him in Arizona before he died. Yeah, 3 foot giant. And I was talking about, he was my coach. He was the guy I called when shit hit the fan and life was really difficult. I called him and I was going through a really tough time and I was supporting some people and whatnot. And one thing he said to me, he goes, Nick, there's a reason. And everyone knows this, but I want to reemphasize the point. There's a reason why they say on the airplane that if pressure, you know, destabilizes and the oxygen mask from the top, you got to put your thing on first, because if you don't, you are good to nobody. Mm-hmm. And he said, Nick, you have not and you are not putting your mask on first. Mm-hmm. You're caring about your clients more, your family more, all these other people. That's a noble thing, but you are of service to nobody if you cannot serve yourself. And so I said, all right. And he goes, I don't know what that is for you. And I don't know what this is for the viewer or the listener right now, but 10 minutes a day of whatever that is, put the oxygen mask on yourself, the bliss, the fun, the joy, the thing that just makes you happy, and just allow that to permeate a little bit and see where that goes. I'm not asking for big commitments. You don't have to let the whole thing go or drop your business or, you know, divorce your partner or whatever. We're not saying that just yet, but just get a sense of what it feels like to be in alignment and just allow things to happen from there. I think that it'll be the beginning of something really special.
Oh, I'm loving this podcast right now. I'm freaking loving it. I'm loving the fact that we get to change the conversation that high-level entrepreneurs are having inside their brains, right? Because whatever is happening inside them, that's their reality. I love it. I love it. Thank you so much.
I love that you said that, Liz. I think that's an important point. That just that reality, that whatever's happening in their brain is their reality. I think that's such an important point to note. That is, it is not the reality. Mm-hmm. It is our reality. Mm-hmm. And if it is our reality, like, I'm a big believer that we are just the byproducts of the story we tell ourselves about ourselves every single day. Mm-hmm. And it's not easy. I'm not going to say, oh, just change the story you tell yourself. Like, that is the actual methodology, but it's not that easy to do. But if we can simply recognize that who we are, our ego, our the Nick Kuzmich in this human flesh that lives on this planet for this temporary time period, is nothing more than constructs that were fed to me as a little child that I held on and I kind of pieced together. That's my reality. The beautiful thing about it is, if that's how it was pieced together, that's how we can deconstruct. And you can start putting new pictures of who your reality is, which is my entire life over the last 5 years. And if that's true, then whatever it is, Liz, you said it so well, your reality in your head, but that's all it is. And if it is just that, then you could change it. And I heard this saying once that's become a driving force in my life as well. So many of us, especially as high-performance entrepreneurs, are looking, how do we become a better version of ourselves? How do we become the next better version of me? And I wish I could give credit to wherever I read it. So I'll take the credit for now because someone else said it, but I live by it. They said, what if life is not about becoming anything, but it's about unbecoming all the trash that we added to ourselves that is dethroning us from who we really are? And so there's this beautiful aspect of, like, now I'm not thinking about who can I become? My question is, who am I and who do I need to unbecome? What are the parts of me that I need to unbecome, if that's a word, to be able to let go and shed these parts of me that are not serving me at all and to recreate my story and my reality a different way?
Oh my gosh. There are so many places that we could take this conversation. Again, thank you so much. We're leaning in, and I hope the listeners and watchers right now are really getting that this is where the game is, quote unquote, won. There are a lot of winners listening right now. I want to win. I want to win. I want the next award. I want the next stage. I want the next gazillion. Winning is an internal game. Let's shift it. Let's shift the conversation here. So I've developed a couple of things. One of the frameworks that I have is the self framework. So I reached a point in my business and my life where I was like, I want it to feel different. I want it to feel different because life is short. That's one of the phrases that I say all the time. Life is short. So the framework that I created here was, I want to, everything goes through the self framework. My business, everything goes through the self framework. And it is imperative that we look after, my wife and I work together, and we look after ourself, which means that our business is simple, easy, love-filled, and fun.
I like that.
S-E-L-F. And if ever we drop down in the fun department, let's just say we're getting into the like, oh, like, if ever we drop down, and if we want to get, like, love is the highest vibration, like, you can create anything from love. Like, if you're loving what you're doing, you're in it, you're feeling it, you're being it, it's incredible. That is absolutely magnetic. And that's part of, like, my magnetism and your magnetism. It's part of how we sell. We just are. We love it. We're doing it. We're being it. And one of the things that I always like to do is if my thing, if my vibration gets low, it's sometimes hard for people to go. So, one of my coaches goes, oh, you need to be in love. You need to get into the love vibration. I'm like, I'm not in love, right? Like, I'm a little bit low. What I'd love to offer to everyone, I love your take on this, Nick. I hope it's okay to call you Nick. Nicholas?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Wait, any of the above.
Nice. And anything else? No, just kidding.
Yeah.
It is to first get to fun. It's easy to go have fun. And fun is the gateway to love. And it's easy to go out and goof off with your kid, to find a smile, to laugh at a fart, to just have fun. Yeah. What would you say to that? Because I know that you've experienced creating in love. You've experienced creating the grind and potentially this love. Yeah. What would you say to the person that just needs more fun in their life?
I think you nailed it so perfectly, because oftentimes when people are assuming that there's a prescription to get back to a place that they were, right? If they fell out of love, they got to get back to love. It's a big jump. And the bigger the gap, the harder the jump. And the harder the jump, the less likely is going to happen. So I think it's beautiful that you say, and I'm going to use that. I love that, is the step in between is fun. If you can make these short micro steps to get there, that's easy. It's something that you could actually see yourself doing. And sometimes, I know this sounds wild and, oh gosh, should we go there? Maybe we should. So can we go there?
Yeah, we'll go everywhere. Let's go.
So my wife and I host, let's just call them therapeutic psychedelic experiences in small formats using a very particular molecule. But one of the things that we do just before we actually enter into ceremony space is we play some just outrageous dance music and we get everybody out of their body, because obviously everyone's very nervous and it's really tough. And I remember the first time I was asked to do this, I'm like, this is terrible. Like, I'm not going to do this. And then the music's playing and you're just kind of wobbling. And then you just like, then you start like going into it or whatever. I know it sounds silly and it doesn't have to be dance or whatever, but the idea is, if can you do that one step, the one thing? And sometimes music has a beautiful part to play in that, because we all can't resist when a nice beat starts playing in the background, right? Yeah. So I would encourage, again, I don't know what fun is to everybody. And maybe you don't know fun. Maybe you've been so disconnected from fun for so long, you're like, I don't even know what that is. Like, sometimes fun even starts by just being quiet in a quiet place and being alone and just like centering in on yourself and be like, can I be quiet just for a moment and just find myself here? And then you might start here. I think actually, this is a great kind of segue. I think, Jeff Spencer, that performance coach, said something to me that really just resonated. He goes, our greatest posture for opportunity is when we move into a spirit of receivership with neutral energy. I know there's a lot there, but our greatest posture for opportunity, in other words, opportunities come a knocking when our internal posture is that of receivership, not forcing it, not like I got to do that, or I'm going to make this happen, or client, why aren't you calling me, or follow up. No, it's in receivership. But the key that I think what a lot of people miss is when you're in that position of receivership, you do it from a neutral, an energy neutral perspective. Because some people, if they come in with a negative energy, they're like, oh, well, I want this to happen now. And obviously that's not going to happen. But some of us, if we come in with too positive is the wrong word, but like false expectation, then we start creating all these expectations. If they don't get met, we let ourselves down. And then it just becomes this kind of a mess of an experience. And everyone's like, well, that was terrible. But when we can be in that, maybe that for some people listening is like, well, I can't do love. I'm not there yet. Can't even do fun. I could dance maybe, but I feel even a little uncomfortable of that. I think there could be something for someone who just says, well, could you then from a neutral, an energy neutral position, just put yourself in a position of receivership? What does receivership mean? I mean, it's kind of like no expectation of saying, okay, like world, what are you teaching me? What is there to learn? What are the things that are to come my way? And sometimes, I'd like to say all the time, but it's not for everybody. Sometimes the little voice sneaks in and say, hey, you know that client? Get rid of them. They're draining you. Or you know that thing that you're doing? Do that. Or you know what? Wake up an extra 15 minutes early and just spend the first 10 minutes of your morning in gratitude. Like, I don't know what it's going to say. But oftentimes, I think sometimes in the still small moments, even if we can't get to love or we can't get to fun, we could get to quiet. And we could be in a posture to see what, you know, what might come up that help us move us in the right direction.
Dude, this is incredible. This is amazing. I freaking love this. This is wow. This podcast will change people's businesses. There will be more money that goes into their business account and their personal account when they listen and listen to this at the depths of their soul. So I'm hoping that people are listening with their heart to this message right now. Thank you so much. You're pouring it all out there. I really do appreciate it. If there was left brain, right brain here for a second. And okay. I want you to start with the right brain because we have left brain, we have right brain, we have masculine, we have feminine.
Right.
We need systems in our business to be able to do certain things. But there's also the other side, the love, the creativity, et cetera. Okay. So I'm pre-framing with that because if I just said to you right now, if there is one book that entrepreneurs should read, based on all the gorgeous love-filled stuff that we were talking about, there would be that version of book. But I'm guessing that there is another book on the other side that would potentially mirror that and match up perfectly. So what would be the left brain, the logical linear book? But let's do that second. What is the feminine energy, the dance book, the alignment book that you would recommend to people?
Okay. It's funny because we had just come back from vacation on Kabul, and that was one of the questions that all of us were asking around the table. It's like, what was the one book that you'd recommend? And my answer, this is not a cop-out, and I have an answer for now in this season. But to me, if you would ask me what is that book, it would depend on what season I am in my life, right? Even from the left brain or the right brain. Because like, you know, there was a time where I needed to understand sales psychology better. So it was sales books. Sometimes it was advertising books. Sometimes it was this. I think if, you know, we all look back and we want to have some sort of an online business, there's like classics like The E-Myth by Gerber or 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss that just shapes how you can consider running a business. One of the more recent books that I read was actually from a good friend of mine called The Buyback Principle, Buy Back Your Time by Dan Martell. That opened up my eyes. And I think it's right in alignment to what we're talking about in business and in living life. One, it's a principle that almost kind of banks on the Dan Sullivan idea that you have your own area of genius and your job is to operate in that realm of genius. And everything else should be outsourced in some way, shape, or form. Outsource is the wrong word. But the idea is, Dan's argument is, you need to buy back your time. The things that don't either feed you or help your family or help your fun or help your business in some way, shape, or form should be bought because other people's genius is doing the things that you're not so great at. So again, it's seasonally. If you ask me this question a year from now, 6 months from now, 3 months from now, it might be different. But I think the left brain book, I got to just give props to my man, Dan Martell, Buy Back Your Time. It's a beautiful alignment idea of understanding your value and understanding how you can live or have a business that feeds your lifestyle rather than a lifestyle that feeds your business.
Love it, dude.
If we were to go the other route, I am now a huge fan of a gal named Brianna West. My wife turned me on to her from the Instagrams and bought all her books, and I started reading her. She just has a way to explain much of what we're talking about here, but in the most eloquent way that just kind of like sinks into the depth of your spirit or your heart. In fact, let me just, if I know we're not stuck on time because we have time. Time is an illusion, isn't it not? But let me just, let me see if I could, okay. So Brianna West, I'm just pulling up her Instagram and like, just to give you an idea, this is the dedication. I don't know if you could see that, a dedication to, in one of her books, but just to give you a sense, it's two lines, but like I read this and I'm like, for those ones who dream of greater things, step and the path will appear. I'm just like, I can't say it like that. Like, I know what that means in here, and I wish I could articulate it like that. And this is just the dedication to one of her books, right? For those who dream of greater things, step and the path will appear, like Brianna West. So like, yeah, I'm a big fan of her work right now because she just has a way with words to capture what it is that you and I, Liz, are talking about here that just sinks into the soul.
Oh my gosh, there are so many things that I can add to this. This is gorgeous. This is amazing. I want to go deep. Like deeper and deeper and deeper. If there is one person, either they have passed away or they are still alive right now and you haven't met them, who is that person and why? If you like, why would you want to meet this person?
Ooh, that's another good question. This is not a cop-out answer, but I'll give you the context and then I'll tell you why. When I was a teenager, I felt like there was a calling on my life to do something great. I just didn't know what that meant. Mm-hmm. And my worldview at the time told me that that meant I had to go into ministry. And so when I was 17 years old, I actually became a pastor. At 19, I became ordained. And for 14 years of my life, I pastored a church. And this was the driving force before my eyes were open to the potential that maybe the God that I was believing in was a lot bigger than the confines of the mind that I'd put it on at that time. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I had all this experience. And then I know when I had, let's call it a deconstruction of faith. I didn't have a falling out with the faith, but I did deconstruct my faith. And now I believe I'm even a deeper person of faith, but in a totally different context. But what happened was, I think when I did that, you know, the old saying, like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Uh-huh.
I think when I deconstructed my faith, I put the Jesus character aside and was like, there is nothing to learn from this man because there was so much pain and hate and institutionalized religion and all this stuff that was done in his name that like I want nothing to do with him. And then the more I started getting deeper into the works of the universe and the faith and belief and inside me and whatever, some parts of me was like, maybe he was onto something. Not from the faith necessarily that we created around his words, but like maybe there was an incarnation or an understanding of grace or an understanding of what it meant to live in this world yet be connected with a higher source. Maybe there was something there. So when you ask like, who would be someone that you'd want to meet? I would want to meet the Jesus character in his time to without the religious blindfolds that I had before. And analyze, because I have a hint that maybe I threw the baby out with the bathwater and there's something to learn from that character that I didn't learn in the previous context.
Oh, isn't it wow. Thank you for the pre-frame, because that would have been like,
yeah,
question
sure.
over.
Yeah, right.
So I'm really glad that you gave the pre-frame to that one. And it's certainly far, in my opinion, far from a cop-out. That is amazing. That is incredible. I went on Friday. Nothing was wrong. I just closed my computer and I just went. So just closed it and went. Nature was calling. And I don't mean to have a tingle. I mean, I wanted to go.
Actual nature. Yeah, outside.
I wanted to go into the hills. New Zealand is gorgeous. So sure, I went into the hills, into the mountains, and I found myself actually barefoot in the forest.
Wow.
And it was just gorgeous. It was connectedness. It was exactly what my body, mind, spirit, soul needed. And as I was sitting there, I found myself going, oh my gosh, that book that I cast aside, that book that was too religious for me way back then. There were too many constructs and I couldn't quite feel it, but I knew it was good. And it's Neville Goddard, The Feeling is the Secret. And way back then I was like, oh, like I want to get this because somebody I respect told me about this book. they've got better results in life than me, so I must read this book. They listen to the book all the time. And I was like, And I listened to it because of how much I've actually just grown consciously.
Yep.
And then I don't need to be worried about things like I used to be, for example, like, oh, that's not me. And anyway, the feeling is the secret. And that book just, and I listened to the book twice walking through the forest. Now, don't be too impressed. Like, the book is like an hour long. Sure. But it goes back to this, like that feeling, the vibration, like meeting and it talks in the book about exactly what you were talking about. About the construct of like Jesus and the connection with the like just this gorgeousness and it coming back to ultimately the feeling within. So I want to spend a little bit of time here talking about feelings. Oh, wait a minute. No, we're entrepreneurs. We're supposed to hustle. We're supposed to grind. We're supposed to force. No. Feeling. It's allowed to feel good. Okay. It's really and truly, everyone listening and watching, it's allowed to feel good.
Yes.
For the person, Nick, who is, so a lot of miserable millionaires listen to this show. People who have become miserable in the process of the hustle and the grind. But there are a lot of people who are seeing the Lambos, seeing the awards, seeing the people on the stages, who might have the awards, but we all know that revenue is very different from actuality and profit.
Sure. Okay?
What would you say to the person about the connection between feeling and how they feel for them to create a business that feels good? Yes, you need to like use that rocket fuel and get off the ground and all that sort of stuff.
Right,
but
right.
Connection in your mind between feelings and creating rapid results for feeling and rapid results. Let's talk about
I love that. I think Abraham Hicks alludes to the emotional intelligence based on feelings. And, you know, a lot of that, a lot of the language used in the Abraham Hicks teaching is this idea of like, are you going upstream or downstream? Which one feels better? When you're swimming upstream, it kind of sucks. When you're downstream, it's like, you just kind of got to lie and allow the stream to take you. And one of the things that she talks about in that Abraham talks about is the emotional intelligence of feelings. Yes. And so oftentimes, you know, and I use this for myself. It's if ever I feel a negative emotion, i.e. a feeling, anger, frustration, et cetera, all I know is that is a, trigger is not the right word, and that's an overplayed word, but that is an indicator for me, an activator to say, okay, slow down. Why do you feel frustrated? Because it means something's unaligned. And so it's a beautiful, like I used to get frustrated all the time and I couldn't figure out, I was like, why am I always all grumpy and this and that or whatever? And I thought it was a problem with me and I got to get my emotions resolved and heal past traumas. And yeah, that's true. I had to do all that. But what I didn't recognize were these were just signposts indicating, hey, I'm in alignment. Am I in alignment or am I not in alignment? And then on the flip side of it, I started recognizing that, hey, you know, and I guess that's what I'm always looking out for in the ethers as I'm going through life is like, hey, is that a blissful thing? Do I feel good? Perfect example. I just had a prospect call with someone who wants to work with us in our agency. You know, and we charge a lot of money for our agency and that would have meant another six figures in revenue just from that one client from them. And I'm like, you know, part of me is like, just sign them up. They want to work with you, like sign them up. But there was a feeling of like, that's all I needed. And that's all I needed because that feeling, well, here's, you probably know this better than I do, Liz, but that feeling when I listen to it in the past only results in good things. Whenever I neglected it or ignored it or pushed it off, no matter how great I thought it was going to be, has always turned around and bit me in the ass. And so now I'm actually utilizing and recognizing that, yeah, sometimes our feelings like leftover pizza from eating it too late at night and wake up in the morning not feeling great. Is there some of that? Yes. Is it sometimes just, you know, chemicals and neurons firing in your brain the wrong way because of a something else that you've done? Potentially. But outside of all that, I think there are also great indicators of intuition. They tap you into the realm beyond the realm, the understandings that we don't necessarily have from this mind and allows us. And again, I think, yeah, let's say it that way. Like, I don't think the language of consciousness are words. And yet we as ego trying to hear words from the other realms of consciousness when we're trying to get a leading or an understanding, I believe the language of consciousness are feelings and emotions. And so the more we can actually tap in and line up with that, Now we're tapping into something beyond just our rational mind and what we've kind of planted in there.
Oh, dude. Yes, 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 yes. I hope everyone is listening. I hope everyone is watching. This is amazing. So you said something really important about unresolved traumas. And yeah, there is a time and a place for making sure, like, you're not bringing your past baggage, the subconscious mind stuff that you don't even know, that you don't even know, that is actually running. Like, a lot of entrepreneurs are walking around as four-year-olds trying to run a multi-million-dollar business.
Right.
Okay. How do you, though, understand if it's a feeling, like, or if it's unresolved trauma? Do you have a way that you know the difference between those two?
Yeah, I think how I've come to understand it is the feeling connected with a repeated pattern?
Got it. Yep.
So if I start recognizing patterns coming up, then that to me usually identifies unresolved stuff. I know people don't like to use the term trauma, so we won't. But unresolved stuff. And to me, trauma is an experience that was emotional minus the wisdom. Right? If we had the wisdom from the experience that was emotionally charged, it wouldn't be trauma. The reason why it was trauma is because the wisdom was removed, the emotions were on high, and we had an experience that affected our ego in some way. And so our ego attaches to that and now has to protect that. And there's a lot of talk, you know, concerning that. So the point is, I think if we start to recognize patterns, then we have to sit back and say, oh, okay, that's an indicator. Because if it happens over and over and over again, or it happens this way, and here's the crazy part about it. I've done a lot of deep work over the last 5 years using all sorts of modalities to go there. And I'm still doing that, by the way, that never ends. But in the more recent near past, here's how sneaky this stuff is, Liz. I would carry subconscious programming in my mind that says something like, I'm a good problem solver. Now on the surface, that's a fucking brilliant kind of, you know, intention to hold, because it's like, yeah, damn right, I'm a good problem solver. And it was just because the entire history of my life was riddled with difficult experiences that I had to somehow navigate and come out a better person of. And so I held on to this. I'm like, damn straight, I'm a good problem solver. And then I started recognizing the pattern. When you're a good problem solver, guess what you get a lot of? And I was like, oh shit. No wonder I'm seeing problems of patterns of problems over and over and over and over again, because the intention I'm holding, it's a good one, is I'm a good problem solver. So what did I have to do? I had to change that programming. And instead of saying I'm a good problem solver, you know, you change the experience and not one that invites problems into your life, but you say, I mean, it could be anything, but like in my case, I could be saying something like, I am open to only beneficial opportunities in my life. I mean, it's a simple thing and, you know, could be a variation of that. But by simply understanding and recognizing a pattern that was in my life and then recognizing that the intention I was holding, which was on paper a good one, was actually repeatedly bringing these things. And it was only because of past trauma, right? Tough situation, I overcame it. Tough situation, overcame it. My brain grabbed onto and latched onto this reality that I can overcome anything, which again, great mentality to have, except if it continues to bring crazy things into your life, maybe you need to change it. So I don't know how we got on that, but
that was incredible. That was amazing. It doesn't matter how we got onto it, because this is incredible, because your identity as an entrepreneur is so freaking important, right?
Right.
So
right.
If we look at this, like, I've had my own version of this where I'm like, oh, I'm very details oriented. And then other people will look, Liz is very details oriented. If we're like, details oriented. And I'm like, I'm drowning in the freaking details now, and I want to fly.
Right.
It's disabling me.
Right.
And I had become details oriented because other people, like contracts, and like I'd lost hundreds of thousands of dollars in contracts that hadn't been signed properly or hadn't been put in the
right. So good.
Anyway, that's where standard operating procedures help, so that I actually don't have to be that person and I get to be me.
Yeah.
But having a misaligned identity with your truth is one of the most toxic things to the soul, right? Doesn't feel good at all.
Yeah.
Dude, I wish that we could just talk and talk and talk and talk and talk. This is incredible. This
That'd
is amazing.
Fun.
We are coming up to the top of the hour and I
already
want to listen. Like, this is, yeah, I know. This is just, we've both been in flow state. I love this. This is incredible. If there was one final thing that you want an entrepreneur to really feel, really get, and this is your opportunity to change their life, to change the trajectory. So there's not so much struggle on this, more flow, more freedom, more harmony, more bliss, what would be one final thing that you would love to say to them?
Oh gosh, there's so much, but I think if we were to like tie it all up in a bow based on everything that we're saying here is build a business, not just a business, but build a life for you, right? Because so many of us are building businesses and lives around the projections of others and the expectations of others. And we were told that we need to have it a certain way. So we're striving for things that, and here's the reality, we're striving for things and there's two end results that could happen. Either you achieve it and you realize you don't feel so great anyways, or you don't achieve it and then you let yourself down for not achieving it. So what if, actually, great way, let's end with this story. It's a metaphor that I gave a long time ago, but I still think it holds true and hopefully it can resonate with some people. There was a movement or a teaching in the past that said, you know, imagine a glass cup. If I had a glass cup, I'd give the analogy here. But there was a teaching in the past that said, hey, you know, if you want to live fulfilled, if you want to be fulfilled, if you want to get the most out of life, you just got to fill your cup. Like fill it up, make it full. When it's full, you'll feel awesome. You'll be great and you'll go. And so we had these empowerment trainings and you could do it trainings and these self-will trainings and like, go, you can do it, motivational, whatever. And then what happened was a whole bunch of people got their cups and filled it up right to the top. We're like, huh. And so then this next movement came around and said, it's not about filling of the cup. It's about the emptying of the cup. Just give yourself. And then there's this movement around charity and giving and giving and giving. And the goal is not filling your cup, it's emptying your cup. And so everyone went around and said, oh, I have a full cup, but now I'm going to give it. I'm going to give. And they get all empty. And then at the end of that, they're like, oh shit, I got an empty cup. I don't feel any better either. And then there was a third movement that came as a result of that. And they said, no, you guys have it all wrong. It's not about filling the cup and it's not about emptying the cup. It's about overflowing the cup. Just fill it. And like, you know, fill it with the beautiful things that are around the world, the bliss and the joy and the fun and all that. But don't stop when it's full. You want it overflowing. And then out of the abundance of the overflow, that's where you go and serve humanity and help people. And that way they win and you win and everybody wins. And so we had these movements of like, abundance mentality versus scarcity mentality. That was the way to go. And everyone did that. And like, I don't feel any better either. And I think the challenge is, what was the common denominator in all those three of those experiences? It was the cup. What if life was about taking that cup and smashing it on the ground as though it didn't even exist? What would happen then? And I think if we can live that way as a takeaway, whatever that might mean for you, I think fulfillment and joy and experience and happiness and bliss and fun become more of a reality for us.
That's a wrap, folks. Liz and the Kapow team hope you've loved this episode of the Happy Million Show. Please help us to spread this mission far and wide by leaving us a 5-star review with an amazing comment. And be sure to subscribe so you're notified with future episodes. We've got some incredible guests lined up for you to hear from to help you build both a business and a life you absolutely love. Full of fun, freedom, family time, friends, fulfillment, fitness, and other Fs. You can fill in the blank. Subscribe now, and for your daily cup of kapower, head over to lizbenny.com. Come on, you know you want to.